Hello, everyone. I'm Hugo Disler from Farming Secrets. We've got the pleasure to bring to all to you farmers Dr. Mary Cole, who we've got. She's online, and we're going to have a talk with Mary, and you can ask questions to Mary as we go. So I won't waste time. I'll go straight into saying hello to Mary. And Mary, would you like to introduce yourself too, please, as to a bit of your background?
Hello, Hugo, and hello to anyone who's listening. Yes, I guess I've spent 40 years of my life as an agricultural scientist and an academic. And I'm a farmer, so I relate very closely to the farming industry. And I guess I've spent my time trying to get farmers into a situation where they can maximize quality and production and minimize costs. And this means looking at alternative ways of farming. In academic life, I have spent a lot of time in the wine industry and also in the various agricultural departments and management departments of the universities. And then I've had a consulting company, which is my little company called AgPath, for probably a similar period of time. And still now trying to retire from academia and spending more time working with farmers and supporting them in their various situations around Australia and through the lab as an independent lab.
We did film you at Oxley, and you were talking about one of the main thing was the botrytis, but then you asked the people who are there as to what categories what sort of farming they were, and about 25-30% showed their hands. They were horticulture come vineyards, and the rest were farmers like sheep farmers, graziers, cropping farmers, and with your work, what sort of farmers do you sort of work with?
Well, I guess with my background in plant pathology, which means I specialize in diseases, particularly fungal diseases, but bacterial diseases as well, I guess what I'm looking at is just anybody who grows a plant. Now, this can be a home gardener. It can be a broadacre wheat farmer. It can be a vineyard person. So anything where a plant is growing, given the previous methodology of farming with chemicals, there's always disease situations, and many of them are weather-driven. So it really doesn't matter to me where the plant comes from. It can also be native plants because I work with the native species and the exotic species. So really it's any living plant I can work with, and I can support a farmer with information with any sort of plant, and even if it's just growing pasture grasses, it's still a plant, and therefore the problems that they have all fall within the field of expertise that I've got. So I've been very fortunate in being able to help anybody basically who grows a plant.
Thank you for saying that. That's quite an extraordinary way of explaining that. Now, you also run a laboratory, and it's called AgPath, is that right?
Yes, yes.
So how do people access you, and what do you do in your laboratory, and basically what's in it for the farmer as far as your laboratory goes?
Well, the laboratory is independent, which means that the work that we do is not associated with any company of any sort. And we do a lot of work for example, biological companies, when they're asking to have their products validated through an independent lab. So we're seen as an independent lab. We don't sell anybody's products. We don't attach ourselves to anybody's products. And what we're trying to do for the farmers is to say, here is a farmer has a problem, some sort of disease or something. What we try to say is, yes, here's the identification of the problem. Here's how it may have happened. Now, we would like you to look at a biological, organic, biodynamic pathway rather than a chemical pathway, because the chemical pathway is probably part of the problem itself. And here within the Australian horticulture, agriculture environment is a whole lot of alternative products that equally, that match the same in the chemical products. So if you're using a herbicide, there is an organic alternative. If you're, if you have a particular disease, there is an organic alternative. And so I guess what AgPath does is it identifies the problem, and then it offers the growers within their particular enterprise and also within their particular climatic zone an alternative set of products that will help them to manage the problem. So the lab itself is a small lab. It's in a farming area, which means it's surrounded by farms. It's easy to get to. We can get samples from as far away as Western Australia and Darwin by priority post in 48 hours. So we're well situated to help a farmer with a problem. The lab has two part-time technicians who have expertise with me in looking at, as I say, particularly fungal diseases of any plant. And we are able to identify, we're able to culture, we're able to look and use a microscope very strongly and take photographs and feed photographs back to the growers so that they can actually see their problems. And then we provide a service in that we, if that's what they ask for, is we offer them an alternative management protocol to be able to fix up whatever it is their problem is. I mean, that's very vague, Hugo, but does that help at all?
Of course it does. So let's take an example of a farmer in Western Australia so who's growing a large it's on large acreages, and how would he use your services? What's the sort of service that he would get from you? What would he ask for?
Right. Well, we would hope that he would be able to get onto us through our website, which is www.agpath.com.au, and then on that he would get access to the various sampling techniques that we've got, I guess. And through a phone call, I would suggest that they do that initially through a phone call and describe what they think their problem might be, or not necessarily a problem, maybe just a change in direction in management style. And then we talk it through, and then we say, well, okay, for example, let's have a look at what your soil quality is at the moment. Let's see what we're starting with. And we would ask them to use the website to see how to take a soil sample, priority posted across. And then we would be looking at the chemistry and the biology, because we work with Elaine Ingham's system whereby we look at the total soil food web that's still functioning in the soil, or not functioning as the case may be, if it's been from a chemical farming point of view. And then we do the tests, and we then send back the results and have a discussion on how those results may have may then equate to the quality of the product that's coming off. If it's a wheat farm, for example, if he's having a decline in productivity, if there's an acidification occurring of the soil, for example, then we're able to use the chemistry and the biology results to be able to say, well, here's a way forward that's not chemical, it'll be biological, but here's a way forward, and it may well be that in that way forward, during that transition period, there may be still a use of chemicals, but we can advise with all of that, because I work with a very good group of consultants who have, along with me, enormous expertise in various systems. And so we put together what we feel is something that the farmer is comfortable in going forward with. Now, this is one of the things that I think is really important. It's not for me to tell a farmer they're doing something wrong, they're going to have to change what they're doing, because they're not doing something wrong. They're doing something that has been advised and has worked for them. So what I try and do is say, there is another way, but it has to be transitioned through to get to there, and it will be different depending on where the grower is coming from in terms of their climatic condition, and also what they're able to do in terms of input into the enterprise, because it may not be cost effective in some cases. And you're talking about a wheat farmer. I'll go back and talk about a grape farmer. If you've got a grape grower who's in the hot climate where they produce volume at low cost, they're not going to be able to do the same sort of thing as a grape grower that's in a cool climate that has low volume and gets high prices. And so a lot of it is predicated on the gate price for the particular crop that the farmer is producing. And so what I try to do is minimize their input costs, maximize their farm gate costs, because after that, they lose control. And so what I'm trying to do is to work with the farmer to maximize their productivity by minimizing their input. Now, that's a long way around of saying that we tell them to send in a soil if it happens to be a soil improvement that's needed, or we have them send in some part of the plant or the plant if there's a disease situation. And then we work very closely with them to try and get a result that is something that they can be comfortable with, rather than me telling them what they should be doing.
When you had your presentation at Oxley, which is the DVD we have sent out to the farmers, you showed one example of one particular example of analysis where there's a particularly low soil fungi. Now, that's like, from our experience, that is what does happen over in Western Australia. So, and that could happen anywhere where farmers are growing cereal crops. So, when you identify someone with a very low fungal content in their samples, well, first of all, you might explain the value of the fungal content, why you'd want it there, and how would you go about trying to help a farmer who has got virtually no fungi in his sample?
Yeah, this is the fungal component of the soil is one of the things that is just, it's almost forgotten about. Well, I mean, soil food web is basically forgotten about anyway. But fungi are so important because they have two roles. They hold together the soil structure. The bacteria hold the sort of soil, sand, silt, and clay together into small aggregates. It's the fungi that then hold those small aggregates together in the larger aggregates that give you the soil, the nice soil structure that one needs to plant into, regardless of what it is. Now, in the past, soil has been over-tilled. It gets worked and worked and worked. And if you imagine the fungal hyphae, that vegetative part of the fungus, is long strands that move out through the soil, particularly if they're mycorrhizal fungi, and I'll explain that in a moment. They go out through the soil, holding the soil structure together, but also go out seeking organic matter in the soil and also phosphorus from the parent material to feed back to the plants. Now, if you can imagine long ropes of this fungal material all through the soil, every time it's tilled, that's broken down. And when that's broken down, some of it will survive, but much of it dies. And so the access that the plant has to this extra nutrient that is in the soil that's not being added from an external source that's actually present in the soil, they're not able to access it because all of this tilling of the soil breaks down these pieces of hyphae. Now, within the fungal kingdom, there's a couple of different groups. One group breaks down the plant material and releases the elements back to be plant available. There's another group called mycorrhizae, which actually have an association with plant roots, and there's really almost no plants on the planet that don't have a fungus associated with them. And what that fungus does, this mycorrhizal fungus, what it does is it attaches into or onto the plant root. It then sends out these long strands out into the soil and harvests phosphorus in particular, but other microelements in a plant available form, and it translocates those back along those long strands of hyphae back into the plant roots at the rate at which the plant wants them. And then in return, the fungus gets the carbohydrates from the plant root because the plant is able to photosynthesize, converts the carbon dioxide, etc., into carbohydrates in its plant structure. Fungi can't do that. They can't photosynthesize. So they rely on plant roots and organic matter to be able to survive. The relationship between the mycorrhizal fungus and plant roots is very important because if you take away all the chemicals that are applied externally and you don't have, you've already damaged this association between the plant root and the fungus, then that plant can't survive. So when we're talking about broad acres, the over-tilling of land has damaged or destroyed the mycorrhizal association. And so it means that plants like wheat, etc., can often only survive with an external application of phosphorus because the hyphae, the long strands that belong to the fungus have been damaged to the extent where the fungus has simply died. And if you continue to apply phosphorus as a chemical, then the mycorrhizal fungus that's associated with the plant roots simply stops functioning altogether and it disappears. So the only way then you can continue to grow a particular plant is to provide external phosphorus. And so you're on this treadmill of always having to make external applications, and that's what biological farming and organic farming tries to stop, is what you do is you stop the over-tilling, you allow the mycelium, the strands of hyphae to grow and populate the soil, and then they harvest the phosphorus that's in the soil in a plant available form, and then you don't need an external source because what you've done is you've put together that part of the soil food web that nature does anyway.